This is the Masterful Art of Self-Care, a podcast where we offer a community and safe space to bring awareness, educate, empower, and be an advocate on the ways that we can break the stigma of self-care from others. This is Anita Ubre-Wallace, your host. Welcome. Welcome to the Masterful Art of Self-Care, and welcome to episode 49. So today's episode is going to be a self-care practices gone wrong. And today I'm going to be talking about vaginal steaming, or also known as yoni steaming. So before I continue on, I do want to apologize. I've been getting over a cold, so if my note or at least my voice sounds a little bit nasally or a little bit congested, and if I have to kind of take a pause just to kind of clear my throat, I apologize again. I'm on the mend, but I guess there's just been a really bad cold that's been going around, and it's just lingering in my system for a little bit longer than I would like. So before we get started, just want to, for all of the new listeners, so we're entering a new season 4, and just want to thank all of the new listeners who are part of the Masterful Art of Self-Care, and just welcome. I'm hoping that so far you're enjoying listening to some of the past episodes. As I mentioned during the season 3 closer, season 4, there won't be as many episodes just because of the I've started a full-time job, and that is taking up a lot of my time. So I'm going to be focusing, at least for each month, releasing 2 episodes. So one will be interview-based, and then the other one will be self-care practices gone wrong. And then as my schedule just kind of leans out, but as I get a little bit more comfortable with my new schedule, then I'll consider whether adding more. But as for right now, it'll be at least twice a month. So. To get into it, so again, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're going to be talking about vaginal steaming or yoni steaming. And why I wanted to take on this topic is because obviously this is, in a way, a self-care practice that there are many women are doing this, whether they do it at home by themselves, or they actually go to a spa and have it as a treatment, as a spa treatment, and pay a lot of money, because it is pretty expensive to get this treatment done. But it's something that's been around for a really long time, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the history, you know, what actually is vaginal steaming or yoni steaming, so if you've never heard of it before. And then just there's been some controversy, especially for those who have been following along, at least around this particular area. There has been some controversy around a particular celebrity who has claimed a lot of really great benefits, you know, from vaginal steaming. And then a pretty well-known doctor, OBGYN, who's actually written a book that I'm currently reading right now, The Vagina Bible, who pretty much discounts a lot of those particular claims. But I'm not taking a particular stance, you know, whether vaginal steaming or yoni steaming is right or wrong. I'm just here to just kind of put out the facts that are present and also talk about a study that's been done, because there has been no study on this particular process or this self-care practice. And I was trying to find the date, and I think when I was doing the research, I think the study was just done last year, 2019, so it's a fairly recent new study that's been done. Again, it's a very, very, it was a small trial. I'm going to say a trial. It was a small study because it was only done on 11 participants. But, and it was looking at the effects of vaginal steaming postpartum. But, and as I'll go in a little bit later, there were some pretty interesting benefits and positives for vaginal steaming. So again, you know, even though I am a medical professional, I'm not here to say this is what you should do. All I'm doing is like providing my opinion and then also sharing a lot of information that you might have heard. So at least kind of having one source, hopefully this podcast, to be able to offer as much information as to the pros and cons of doing it, and then hopefully you seek out the right resources if this is something that you actually want to pursue and have it be part of your self-care practice. So without further ado, so what exactly is vaginal steaming? So I will provide a lot of the resources under the show notes, so that way if you wanted to go and do a little bit more research yourself, or just to at least be able to read some of the articles, you can definitely go ahead and do that. But from a lot of the articles that I researched, it is a pretty age-old remedy. And the focus of the reason why people did yoni steaming is really to cleanse the vagina as well as the uterus. So it was used in various cultures. So everywhere pretty much from ancient Greece, ancient Korea, Africa, China, Central and South America. So in a lot of these countries, it's been a practice that's been done. And obviously it's not gonna be the same throughout all those countries, probably whether the use of different herbs and the process of doing it or how long they did it for and for what ailments they use the vaginal steaming. I'm sure we're all probably pretty different, but it is a practice that actually seems to have been done for quite a long time. And the process that takes place in doing the vaginal steaming is essentially there's a stool, and so it can be, either, especially a lot of the yoni steaming chairs or stools that they have now, they're really expensive, but otherwise it could be pretty rudimentary. And so there's a stool with like a hole cut out, so that way you sit on the stool and obviously you have your vaginal opening exposed. And then underneath that stool, then you would have a pot of boiling water. So it'd be pretty hot water, you let it cool down. And then inside that pot of boiling water would be herbs that would be infused in the water. And then at least the theory is that all of the steam would then make its way up through your vaginal canal, and then hopefully all the way up to your uterus, and then the effects of those herbs would have some impact in regards to everything. So it could be like hemorrhoids, infertility, menstrual cramps, cysts, UTIs, fibroids. You can be able to use it whether it's to detox or to cleanse or clear up, any of those certain conditions that I mentioned. So there were a lot of uses for it. And then the woman would sit there on that stool for about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, just really depending, and they would keep themselves covered up. So they would have like a blanket, so that way they, a blanket around them, so that way even as the steam is just kind of making its way up the vaginal canal and just kind of permeating all of the tissues that are there. And then you also just kind of keep yourself nice and warm as well. And then afterwards, the focus, or at least after doing the vaginal steaming, then you would just allow yourself to rest. You can either meditate, have, a cup of hot tea. And that sounds really nice, as having that as be a self-care practice for sure. So this was pretty popularized. So as I mentioned, at least in regards to what has been found and what has been researched, is that this is a practice that's been practiced for a really long time. I'll go into the history in just a little bit, but before I do that, this practice was popularized by Gwyneth Paltrow, and she has a health and wellness lifestyle website and, brand called Goop. And so she really helped to popularize this particular self-care practice, and so much so that a lot of spas were then beginning to offer this treatment, and then you're starting to hear more about vaginal steaming in magazines and in media, whereas before it was a practice that was really done by a lot of immigrants from a lot of those different countries as they came to the US or into Western countries, where they still continue that practice. So before I go into like how it actually works, I'll just go into a little bit of the history. So it has actually been well documented throughout history that it has been used in a lot of those countries that I mentioned, whether it's like Africa, your Asia, Oceania, as well as in the Americas. So it became, pretty obscure in the U.S., so obviously a lot of the immigrants came over to the U.S., they were still continuing to practice it, but it became really obscure, especially after the marginalization of midwifery in the 19th as well as in the early 20th century. And so if you don't know, much about the history of midwives, it's definitely something, if you're interested in this, really pretty fascinating to read about. But, midwives were they were the main ones who were, taking care of delivering, delivering babies before, the hospitals were like the place where you would have a baby. And as Western medicine, especially Western gynecology and obstetrics, became a lot more, went on the rise, then And a lot of those hospitals and Western medical system obviously was taken over by, you know, men, then they pushed out a lot of midwives. Obviously, a lot of them were women because they, I don't want to say that they wanted to take over that role, but I think that they, you know, saw obviously that there was a market and that they can be able to put women in these hospitals and have more control over the process of birthing and pretty much wipe out a lot of midwives where they were doing this as part of their livelihood and, you know, just kind of also disrupting a lot of the culture around midwives, which is unfortunate. But obviously, you know, there's definitely been a recent uptick in the use of midwives and has definitely a lot of benefits. But at least in regards to the vaginal steaming, so it became pretty obscure as midwifery was being pushed out in the United States and around the 19th and early 20th centuries. But it was very much still a common practice among women, and especially women who didn't have access to medical establishment, i.e. hospitals. So if they didn't have the money, or they didn't have the access, or if it wasn't even accessible to them, you know, just because of distance or money, then, you know, if they were dealing with whatever, you know, woman issues they were having, then, you know, they would obviously reference their elders and be able to, you know, find a process or a way to be able to, you know, handle or treat some of these particular conditions that they were dealing with. And so a lot of those immigrants who came to the U.S., they continued and also furthered on this practice. And so I think then, you know, I would say probably in the last 10 years, especially with Gwyneth Paltrow and a lot of other celebrities, you know, touting the benefits of this practice, but it's something that actually has been in practice for quite a long time, just wasn't, you know, talked about. So how exactly does it work? So there's a lot of claims, and so I'm going to just, you know, spout off a lot of the claims. And again, I'm not here to say that, yes, this works, and I'm not here to say, no, it doesn't work. All I'm here just to kind of lay out what the particular claims are for vaginal steaming, and then definitely, you know, leave it up to you as the consumer or the person who is willing to take on this practice as to whether you're gonna find it beneficial or not. So a lot of the claims state that the steam goes into your vagina, but then there's a question like, well, you know, does it actually go up your vaginal canal? And so like really looking at the anatomy, you know, given the anatomy, yes, the steam can make its way up through the vaginal canal for sure, but can it actually permeate and, you know, permeate through the cervix? And I'm Dr. Jen Gunter, you know, she makes a comment both on her website as well as, you know, in her book, The Vagina Bible, that I can't go up through, you know, a closed cervix. But I think having an understanding, you know, just based on where you are in your cycle, that, you know, the cervix, you know, does have, I'm going to say it does have an opening. And also, especially after having had children, that there's going to be a change in the structure of your cervix as well. So not wanting to, you know, argue with, you know, whether the steam can actually go up through the cervix, but I think every woman is different, and I don't think that it's necessarily that it's going to be, you know, on a closed cervix all the time, because, you know, for some who have already had multiple pregnancies, the cervix is going to be a lot different than for a woman who's never had a pregnancy. And also based on where you are in your cycle, that's also going to change as well too. But yes, so the steam can make its way up through the vaginal canal for sure. But there is the question, you know, can it actually make its way, you know, actually touch the uterus, you know, and actually have some type of impact? So Dr. Jen Gunter, again, you know, the author of the Vagina Bible, she is an OBGYN. She states that unless the steam is under a high amount of pressure, then it would be really difficult for that urban-fused steam to make its way from the vagina all the way up to the uterus. And I like the example that she gave. It's like, you know, thinking of an example like ejaculation. So you would, you know, think of having sperm that's coming, you know, from the penis under a high amount of pressure, and it's making its way, you know, through the vaginal canal, you know, in through the cervix, making its way into the uterus, even possibly traveling up or, you know, up and out towards the fallopian tubes in order to go and implant an egg. Then you know, that's a lot of pressure that's going through. So I think it would be highly unlikely that you would have that same amount of steam that would actually be doing that same thing when, you know, the woman is just sitting there and the steam is just, you know, gently making its way up through the vaginal canal, you know, for it to really have a big impact on, you know, any type of condition that might be affecting the uterus, fallopian tubes, you know, more of those internal reproductive organ systems. I could see how, yes, it could, you know, have some impact on, you know, the vulva, the vaginal canal. But further up, you know, I think it's a little bit, it's a little bit harder to, you know, at least anatomically, physiologically, you know, see how it can have an impact. So there's that. The steam, you know, so depending on how hot that water is, and especially for someone who's inexperienced, you know, they read about this and they want to give it a try, and they can actually burn. I mean, not just by touching, you know, having the hot water touch, you know, their vulva, but if that's if they haven't they boil the water, they haven't allowed, you know, the water to sufficiently cool down, they can actually burn some of those really delicate mucosal tissues and damage them. And, you know, I don't think that that's really the thing that they're going for when they're doing a vaginal steam. So that's, you know, one thing that could potentially be pretty harmful and, you know, also pretty dangerous, you know, if that particular person is not really doing their research and really taking the time to figure out, okay, what's the process? How do they do it? And I think I would also say the same thing with the herbs as well too, you know, because there's a lot of herbs that are recommended for certain types of conditions. And you know, if you're not working with an herbalist, and or if you're picking the herbs yourself and you don't even really know what you're doing, or you're picking the herbs, you know, not from an organic or pesticide-free spot, and you're just, you know, picking off the side of the road. Not saying that, you know, someone would do this, but you never know. Then you're boiling that water and then infusing that water with those herbs when you don't even know where the herbs are coming from. You know, you could be putting in whether pesticides, some type of toxins, or even just from the herbs itself, you know, which they can be pretty volatile, especially, you know, those oils. And if you're putting in a certain amount and you don't even know, you know, the dosage, how much you should use, that can be pretty volatile to those tissues as well. So, again, I think it can have some benefits, but it's really important to really know what it is that you're doing before you take this on and have this be part of your regular self-care practice. I think it really should be something that you're, you know, seeking consultation from an herbalist or a functional medicine, OBGYN, someone who actually does this practice, you know, for their patients, has an understanding of how it works, and then can kind of walk you, guide you through the process, I think is really important. Another thing that Dr. Jen Gunter also mentions is obviously we know that the vagina, the vaginal canal, that it's a whole host of a pretty unique environment of different bacteria and yeast. It's its own microbiome. It's a very delicate environment as well too, and so pretty much anything can disrupt it. So even, you know, it has a certain pH, even when semen is in there, you know, that can also disrupt the pH of the vaginal canal. So it's really important that we obviously don't disturb it, because then when we do, then that's when we end up, you know, getting a whole host of infections and lots of serious issues in that area. So one of the things that Dr. Jen Gunter mentions is that the lactobacilli strains that keep our vaginas healthy are pretty finicky about their environment. And so raising the temperature, i.e., you know, through steam, could also be pretty harmful. And so again, if someone is doing this practice and they're working with really hot water, they're not allowing it to cool down, you know, not really vigilant and, you know, checking the temperature, whatever that may be, they can also not be just doing damage to, you know, the steam, causing damage to the mucosal tissues, but also could be affecting that microbiome environment that's in the vagina, and that can also set things off in the negative direction for sure. So, as I mentioned, you know, if you're not an herbalist, if you're not really trained on what herbs are effective, you know, I think it's where you really want to be seeking someone out in order to go and help you, because it definitely, not using the right herbs, not sourcing them from the right place, could definitely cause a lot of interruption to the flora, definitely do a lot of damage, lead to infections, and then a lot of other issues. So a lot of these warnings are definitely based on theory, and a lot of them are not necessarily on clinical data. You know, so a lot of, whether it's doctors, you know, or other naysayers, are basing this off of, yes, basing it off of anatomy and having an understanding of physiology and, you know, maybe even physics as well too. And a lot of it is on theory. No one has actually, you know, taken the time to, you know, track, you know, a group of women who are doing this practice, who have any particular type of condition, and seeing, okay, well, if they do this vaginal steam for a period of, you know, 10 days, you know, every day using this particular protocol, and then what are, you know, what are the results? And no one has really ever done a clinical data or done a clinical study to go and look at this. Not until this particular study called the fourth trimester vaginal steam study, which I mentioned, I think actually took place either in 2019, 2018. It's actually fairly recently, where they actually did look at the effect of vaginal steaming for postpartum mothers. And it's a really great study. It's pretty short to read through, so not too long, and I will provide the link for the study. But as I mentioned, so they did the study. They looked at 11 postpartum mothers. There were more women who were part of it, but it was just 11 who actually completed the whole entire study. And so they had a control group as well as a steam group. So obviously, for that kind of bring you back all the way to science, if you aren't really, you know, into science. So the control group, those are the ones who don't receive the experimental, whether it's medication or the experimental drug or the procedure or the protocol. So they're not getting whatever it is that's being looked at, being experimented, that control group, they're not receiving anything. So they're getting regular treatment. So all these postpartum mothers, you know, they had their babies, they went through, you know, the 6-week checkup, and they're getting, you know, they're getting looked at, and I'm gonna mention what were some of the different criteria that they looked at. And then there was the steam group, so where they actually received 5 days of vaginal steam after their 6-week pelvic exam. And so there were lots of really interesting findings that they found. So a couple of things that they were looking at, one of them was blood pressure and the pulse. And so for one of the biggest issues, you know, during pregnancy as well as after pregnancy, is preeclampsia. And so preeclampsia is where the woman is going to have high blood pressure, and that could be potentially very, very dangerous for them to have high blood pressure, because then it can cause seizures. You know, if it gets serious enough, it can cause like renal failure. My mom actually had preeclampsia after she gave birth to me. So I, you know, it was via C-section. And she had preeclampsia, I believe, during her pregnancy with me. And she gave birth to me. I was totally healthy and fine. And then, you know, whether it was like a few hours, she got up to go to the bathroom, ended up having like a really mild seizure. A lot of it was because of the preeclampsia, was really close to renal failure. You know, it's pretty serious. You know, she could have lost her life, and there are a lot of women who either do lose their life or are very, very close to losing their life because of preeclampsia. So it's a pretty serious condition. And so this was one of the findings that they looked at, was that through the use of vaginal steaming, they found that there was, over these 5 days, you know, they measured their blood pressure, was that there was a decrease in blood pressure as well as pulse. And these were in the healthy ranges compared to none of them develop preeclampsia, but obviously they're monitoring them to make sure that they don't end up having high blood pressure. But there was a decrease in their blood pressure as well as their pulse that was within the healthy ranges. So the other thing that they looked at was the fundus height of the uterus. And so the fundus is the very top part of the uterus. And so during or actually after pregnancy, what they're looking for is the uterus eventually to shrink and go back to its normal size. So obviously knowing that the uterus can expand to obviously fit a baby, and it can, hit a height of like all the way up towards your rib cage, up towards your diaphragm, because obviously by the time a woman gets into their third trimester, they have a lot more difficulty with breathing, and obviously with a little bit of leakage sometimes, just because of all that pressure, up on the diaphragm, the respiratory diaphragm, so with breathing, and then below the pelvic floor diaphragm, and then having incontinence issues or a little bit of leakage. So they looked at the fundus height reduction, and so they noticed that the women who received the vaginal steaming actually had a faster reduction of their uterus, reducing in size than they did than the women in the control group. And so this was, again, they were all under, fairly same conditions. They also noticed that there was weight loss as well as a waist size reduction. And so, there wasn't, that was just one thing that they were looking at. Obviously, after pregnancy, you have put on a lot of weight. A lot of weight, is lost, obviously, from the baby, a lot of the blood that's lost. And then, through breastfeeding is one, just several different mechanisms or ways that women tend to drop their weight. And they just noticed, again, that those who received vaginal steams actually had, it wasn't significant, it was like maybe of like 5 pounds, and then the waist size reduction was like maybe 2 to 3 inches. So it wasn't anything dramatic, but that was something that they did note. In addition, there was faster healing of the labia from swelling or gapping. And so one of the indicators that they looked at, so if a woman was placed in a supine position or lying on her back and then her legs fell open, so then that was one way of how they determined, whether the swelling or what they also called gapping of the labia, and the labia are like the lips, so labia majora most likely is what they were looking at. And obviously, if a woman had given birth vaginally, just from all that pressure, all that blood, there's definitely a lot of swelling because everything is just healing. So they again noted that there was faster healing rate for the vaginal steam group in regards to their labia. They also looked at lochia. So I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, lochia or lochia, but this is the discharge. So after delivering, there's a discharge. So it's like a bloody discharge that can continue, from anywhere from, 2 weeks up to 8 weeks, after pregnancy. So it can last, it varies. And so one of the things that they noticed was that the color of the lochia progressed from red to a serous color. And serous is like either a yellow or a translucent color, again, in the vaginal steam group compared to the control group. Whereas, over the course of the study, that they were still having a discharge, a bloody discharge or a red discharge. And then also, they also looked at, not just the color, but also the speed of the lochia expelling from the body as well. So, obviously, by seeing the color, the change in the color of going from, red to more of like a yellow to a translucent color, then that just gives a really good indication that a lot of that discharge, that blood, is being expelled from the body a lot quicker. So a couple of about two or three more things. So those who had sutures due to tearing, so one of the things that they noted was that pretty much all of the women had some type of tearing. I don't remember what grades they were, but I think that none of them had grade fours, but I think that they were either like from a grade two to grade three tearing. So all of them pretty much needed sutures or stitches in order to close up those tears. And so again, they noted that the group who received the vaginal steam during those 5 days after the 6 week pelvic exam, that they didn't have any discomfort from those sutures. So some of the discomfort that the woman in the control group had was like the pulling, just because it's, you know, this where the sutures are, and it's in a pretty delicate area. So they experience pulling, they experience itching, as well as tenderness. But the women who were in the vaginal steam didn't experience any of that discomfort. And I can definitely see how that could be helpful. Like, for me, that is pretty tangible, just because the steam, it's really moist, it's warming, and so that's going to most likely help promote a lot of the healing, rather than, you know, that area kind of staying dry and not receiving like any type of, you know, benefit of, you know, whether heat, in order to kind of provide some type of comfort from where those sutures are. And lastly, was improved bowel movements. So in bowel movements and hemorrhoids, so obviously hemorrhoids are caused by a lot of straining, especially if they're constipated. I believe that they said that pretty much all of the women were constipated. They had some level of constipation, but then before they started the study. And then the women who were in the vaginal steam group, that they actually had improved their bowel movements, where they were no longer constipated. And because they were no longer constipated, then they also had a decrease in hemorrhoids. Whereas the ones in the control group were the ones who still were dealing with constipation, and they still had, you know, pretty high level of hemorrhoids after the study. And again, this is the control group. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of really positive implications to the use of vaginal steaming. And again, this is looking at just a very, very small group. It's looking at postpartum. You know, it's not looking at any of the other conditions that I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. But to, I think, see that vaginal steaming can have such a huge impact, especially just in that recovery time for a postpartum mom, I think is big, you know, because then it just allows them to be in more comfort in their body, you know, like being able to like go to the bathroom and not have to strain, not have to deal with hemorrhoids, not have to feel like all of that itching and, you know, discomfort, you know, in that area when they're also having to try to take care of a baby. I think like any little thing is going to be big, it's going to be massive in their healing, and then just in their self-esteem as a mother, you know, and feeling that they're capable of what they can do as a mom, and also still taking care of themselves. So for me, in my book, I would say like, yeah, then that's, you know, if at least we're seeing that it can have some benefit for these women, then why not? You know, I don't think it can hurt them, might as well, you know, give it a try and then see how it can help improve their lives a little bit, you know, and improve their postpartum recovery a little bit. So there's definitely a lot more research and studies that are needed. The unfortunate thing is, because of the way that our medical system works, is that most likely it won't get funded. You know, these type of studies don't get funded because it doesn't support, you know, a drug, it doesn't support, you know, a medical procedure. You know, it's pretty naturally based. It doesn't require a lot of intervention. And, you know, I think that when the woman, the mother, is given the tools, okay, this is how you do this, then they're putting their healthcare into their own hands. And not to, you know, be like the Debbie Downer, I am in the medical field as well too, but yeah, I mean, that the medical system doesn't like that. In some cases, I'm not saying like all, like everyone is like that, but I think when you're looking at the grand scheme of our healthcare system and insurance, that's not something that they would go for. And so that isn't something that's going to be funded. That isn't something that they're going to be spending a lot of money in order to go and study. So like this particular group who did this study, you know, this was, a private group that, you know, put the money towards doing the study. And it costs money, you know, to do these type of things. So I commend them that they, you know, did that in order to start at least the ball rolling and, you know, having some research and showing that, you know, this can be really beneficial. So, yeah, I think especially if women are feeling compelled to, you know, try this practice, I think that there are definitely some positive implications in giving this a try. So, you know, I think in addition, as I mentioned, like how the medical system, they have like such a a big play in this, but there's also, I think we need to discuss the shaming or the dismissal of, you know, remedies or practices that, you know, are non-Western or that are not approved by the medical industry as well too. And as I mentioned, you know, this is supposedly, and I'd love to, you know, do more research and, you know, actually find, you know, books that were written, you know, back in like the 1900s, you know, or earlier that actually talked about these practices. But obviously a lot of them didn't write a lot of these things. You know, it's very much like oral tradition, or, you know, it just got passed on, you know, from one generation to another. And they didn't really write about a lot of the stuff. But I think that a lot of, you know, these types of practices that have been done for so long, and especially in more indigenous cultures, in more, you know, ethnic cultures, then those are things that are either shamed or they're dismissed as not really helpful, and everything should be, you know, very much, you know, what Western medicine says. And I don't think that that should always be the case, because you're seeing right now this uptick in like functional medicine and in integrative medicine, where it's not just, you know, Western medicine definitely does have its benefits, and it's helped to keep a lot of us living a lot longer after accidents or injuries or, you know, traumas. But then also you see like the opposite side of chronic illness and how that has also risen as well too. So there isn't one clear answer for sure. But, you know, coming back to this vaginal steaming, I think if, you know, it's a practice that has been done by cultures for a really, really long time, and there have been a lot of benefits, you know, for some women, I think it would be great to have more research done on this topic. And I think, you know, if some women have been doing this and practicing it and they find some benefit, then, you know, I don't want to say like, oh, you should stop doing it. I am going to give myself, you know, I'm going to put myself out there and like as an example that, you know, I had fibroids for quite a few years before I had my first pregnancy. And then I miscarried, you know, halfway through the pregnancy. And a lot of it was because it was due to the fibroids. And, you know, with me wanting to go the natural route as much as possible and wanting to avoid surgery to have the fibroids removed, I did consider doing a vaginal steam. And I bought, you know, a set of herbs that were specific for fibroids. And I have to say, you know, I only did it once. I did it like maybe once or twice. And I think just because I didn't have, you know, whether it was an integrative, you know, practitioner or, you know, someone just to kind of help guide me and to encourage me, because I was just kind of doing it on my own. Like I found the herbs online and then I bought the necessary stuff that I needed, but I didn't follow through. I didn't really stick with it because I wasn't sure. And I hadn't heard of other people doing this before and I didn't know what were the results of it at all. So I wish that I did have someone, you know, who I could go to for as a resource, I could go to for mentorship, you know, to make sure that what I was doing was correct and what I was doing was right. And so again, that's something that if you are considering doing vaginal steaming, or you've heard of it, or you have any of the number of conditions that were mentioned earlier, and you have heard that it can be helpful, I say, why not? You know, if it's the choice of either taking some, you know, over-the-counter medication or even some high potent, you know, medication that your doctor is prescribing to you, or you have the option of trying, you know, a natural alternative treatment, you know, for your condition, I don't think it could hurt to at least try, you know, the natural route first, you know, see if it works. And obviously with any natural route, it's going to take a lot longer. It's not going to be an easy, quick fix, like, you know, taking, you know, any type of medication with, you know, most natural holistic route, you know, it takes a long time. So again, my opinion, but I think, you know, definitely worth a try. So yeah, if I could go back, you know, my experience was short-lived, but I would definitely want to try it again. I just didn't have the right direction with regards to the frequency or the usage, or to make sure that I was, you know, on the right track. So overall, as we come to this close, I just want to, you know, say that we shouldn't be so quick to say no this thing doesn't work, or that when it has, you know, helped other individuals, especially as seen through this particular study. And again, you know, I don't have the answers. All I'm doing is just kind of exposing a lot of what I've seen, some of the facts, what are also some, you know, particular claims or theories. But, you know, my opinion isn't firm. I'm still uncertain on this. I myself would want to try a vaginal steaming and do it for a longer duration. Not that I have any particular condition, but just to kind of see, like, okay, well, you know, using some, you know, maybe not even herbs, but just, you know, just doing the whole process and just seeing, okay, how does me just kind of putting steam, you know, something that can be warming, calming, you know, to the vaginal mucosal tissues, you know, how could that affect my cycle? You know, I think those are really valid and interesting questions, especially if it's something that's been practiced for a very, very long time. I don't see what the harm could be. But also, if you're not being directed correctly, if you're not working with someone who knows what they're doing, then I'd say you want to make sure you're doing that so you don't end up, you know, causing some harm or damage to yourself. So this is the Masterful Art of Self-Care, Self-Practices Gone Wrong. Don't want to say that this is a self-care practice that has gone wrong. You know, so the guise of that title is just to kind of expose a lot of self-care practices that have gone wrong. And it's surprising I didn't read any cases of women who have done this particular practice and then something terrible has happened. And I don't know whether anything terrible has happened. Again, like, I think a lot of it is just the theory that something terrible can happen. But I didn't read or see anything of where something terrible has happened for a woman using or doing a vaginal steam. So, yeah, I would love to hear from any of you if you have done it, if you know someone who has done it, or if you have done it and you've seen really great benefits. It'd be really great to hear, you know, what your stories are. I think, you know, in order to debunk a lot of these myths or debunk a lot of these claims or theories that, no, it's not going to be helpful, we need to hear from more women who have done this and what benefits they have had. So definitely, please, please, please reach out and share anything that you think might be helpful. So thank you again so much for listening, and I'll catch you later. So thanks for listening to this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. For more interviews and inspiring stories like this one on self-care practice gone wrong, where I am helping to bring the neglected and seldom talked about parts of our body to the forefront of self-care, please consider subscribing to our channel on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify. Do you have an interesting story to share? And if so, I'd love it if you can shoot me an email at tia@themasterfulartofselfcare.com, or you can direct message me at selfcarephysio on Instagram. If you like what you hear, consider supporting this podcast, so you can always visit the link on the show notes to make a donation. There are a lot of new things that are happening, and I want you to stay in the know, so consider signing up for our newsletter. I don't post in the newsletter very often, so at least for this new year, it's going to be just once a month, and it's really just going to be a synopsis of all of the podcast episodes, any podcast episodes that I have been interviewed on, and any interesting stories, articles that I would like to share with you, as well as workshops, in-person workshops that I'll be doing in the future. So all of that will be in the newsletter. So you can consider signing up so you can get updated on all of those things and everything that I share that has some relevancy through other healthcare disciplines. All of that is available by signing up at themasterfulartofselfcare.com. Let's help make self-care more accessible and down to earth for mothers. Thank you again for listening.